Bhagavad Gita, as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Chapter 1, Observing the Armies on the Battlefield of Kurukshetra. And which verse? 11? Today. Krista. Okay. You did 11 last week, is it?
Last year.
Last year.
Oh.
You mean 2016? Well, you know what I feel like doing? Just to get us going again, I'm going to read verse 11. Is that okay? Unless anyone objects extremely strongly, which I don't really expect. So, because it's interesting. There's some interesting points in this verse. So, okay, first of all, please, repeat after me. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Vasudevaya. Yes, so very good. Bhagavad Gita chapter 1, verse 11. And I assume I'll just read the Sanskrit myself. Ayaneshu chasarveshu yata bhaga avastita bhishman eva birakshantu bhavanta sarva evahi. Translation. All of you must now give full support to Grandfather Bhishma as you stand at your respective strategic points of entrance into the phalanx of the army. This is Duryodhana speaking, who is the chief opposition to Arjuna, Yudhishthira, and to Lord Krishna, for that matter. So let us read the purport by Srila Prabhupada. Duryodhana, after praising the prowess of Bhishma, further considered that others might think that they had been considered less important. So, in his usual diplomatic way, he tried to adjust the situation in the above words. He emphasized that Bhishma Dev was undoubtedly the greatest hero, but he was an old man. So everyone must especially think of his protection from all sides. He might become engaged in the fight, and the enemy might take advantage of his full engagement on one side. Therefore, it was important that other heroes not leave their strategic positions and allow the enemy to break the phalanx. Duryodhana clearly felt that the victory of the Kurus depended on the presence of Bhishma Dev. He was confident of the full support of Bhishma Dev, and Dronacharya in the battle, because he well knew that they did not even speak a word when Arjuna's wife Draupadi, in her helpless condition, had appealed to them for justice while she was being forced to appear naked in the presence of all the great generals in the assembly. Although he knew that the two generals had some sort of affection for the Pandavas, he hoped that these generals would now completely give it up, as they had done during the gambling performances. Let me read the verse again. Ayaneshu chasarveshu yata bhaga avastita bhijmareva virakshan tu bhavanta sarva evahi. Translation: all of you must now give full support to Grandfather Bhishma as you stand at your respective strategic points of entrance into the phalanx of the army. Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gaur Madhikuchani Nir Vishvishas Vrindavadi Pasuchyate Shatani Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare
Hare Hare
Rama Hare devotees. I'm so happy to be here with you all again. And I hope everyone is happy in Krishna consciousness. I hope everyone is chanting their rounds. Are you all chanting your rounds? I see a few heads nodding. That's good. It's important. It is like, you could say, it is like our food. Prasadam, it is. How long can you live without eating? Not very long. And if you are not eating, very quickly you will lose strength. Later, you'll die, but within a day, or less than a day, you'll feel the lack of food. And chanting Hare Krishna, this is like our food. It gives us strength. It gives us different things, actually. But the first thing, and perhaps the most noticeable thing it gives is strength, spiritual strength. And that strength manifests in different forms, but very noticeable is that you become more and more protected internally in your heart and your mind. Emotionally also, you become protected from lower types of drives and moods and feelings, the lower types of attitudes, states of mind, like, of course, classically, lust, anger, greed, pride, arrogance, fear, and so on. Envy, all these lower things which practically anyone can understand. These are lower states of mind and lower types of attitudes. You know, I think any person in the street can understand that. But chanting Hare Krishna, the whole process of Krishna consciousness, but foundationally, in the most basic and supportive way and essential way, the chanting, it gives us that strength, and you'll feel that your mind, your thinking, your emotions are becoming cleaner, so to speak. Cleaner, purified, becoming free from these types of feelings. Yes, and you know, another example is given in regard to the value of chanting and the effect and influence that chanting has, is that if you want to drive from here to Johannesburg, if you want to drive, then you will need at least some minimum amount of petrol. If you have more than the minimum, of course, that's all the better. But at least you need some minimum. Otherwise, you will run out on the road somewhere. And you know what South Africa is like? If you run out on the road somewhere out there, way out, you could be in serious trouble. At the very least, you haven't reached your destination, and how are you going to reach it? But your life could well be in danger. So like this, chanting is also, we said, like food. It's also like fuel. That to get through the day, from beginning to end, to get through the day, the whole day, in Krishna consciousness, in spiritual consciousness, and like we said, not being too affected by these lower emotions, well, to get through the whole day, you need at least a minimum amount of spiritual fuel or chanting, the mantra, transcendental spiritual mantra, spiritual sound. And therefore Srila Prabhupada said 16 as you know, really what you need to really get through the day in good spiritual condition. There's a few things to bear in mind. This verse and purport and this whole part of Bhagavad Gita, I'm sure you're well aware, it's very introductory. Krishna is not teaching anything really at this point about who is God, who are we, what is our relationship with God. All these things which of course he goes into through the greater part of Bhagavad Gita, that he's setting the scene. What is the historical situation, historical circumstances? So it's interesting and it's important. And there's a couple of interesting points here. Which I could just mention. One is, the first point is, as Prabhupada mentions here, Bhishma is being very diplomatic. You understand what we mean by diplomatic. You say one thing, but you mean another thing. And you're just trying to sort of manipulate the emotions and so on, the thinking of some person or people. This is being diplomatic. And Prabhupada explains that Duryodhana, Bhishma is not being diplomatic. Duryodhana is being diplomatic. He was a great politician. And Duryodhana, he didn't want to say that, look, Bhishma is an old man. And, you know, old people, he fancies himself as a bit of a warrior. So he wants to get out there and fight. But he's an old man. And, you know, what can an old man do against strong young men? Well, yeah, it's very dangerous for that old man. So he doesn't want to say that. But he wants to get the effect of some of the other soldiers protecting Bhishma, making a special effort to look after him and care for him, like that. So he puts it in another way. So it doesn't seem like he's insulting Bhishma that you're an old man, you may not be able to manage, and so you need someone to protect you. So he puts it in another way, being diplomatic. You know, generally being diplomatic or like duplicitous, duplicity is like extreme diplomacy. And generally such practices are not encouraged for devotees or spiritually minded people. One of the pillars of irreligiosity, non-religious life, is cheating. Yeah, there's, you know, in terms of pillars of religious life, there's cleanliness, austerity, truthfulness. There's another one. What's the other one? Mercy. These are four principles of religiosity. To be merciful, to be truthful, and to be clean, and be austere. You know, meat eating, gambling, illicit sex life, intoxication, these act against those good qualities. Meat eating acts against mercy. How can you be merciful if it has never occurred to you or really struck you deeply that I am living at the expense of the life of some innocent creature? That innocent creature did not volunteer to become my meal. That innocent creature had his or her family also and feelings. But I'm just eating. So, lack of mercy. Then truthfulness is undermined, particularly in terms of our regular principles, by gambling. In Bhagavad Gita, what does Krishna say? I am the gambling of cheats. If someone is a successful gambler, I think they have to cheat. But they do it very cleverly. And then austerity, cleanliness, they're undermined by illicit sex life, intoxication. These things are all connected together. So that untruthfulness, that there's no real place for that generally in spiritual life and religious life. One should be very honest and straightforward, yeah, and not have a cheating mentality. Yes, so this is something to bear in mind. But during a death, he is the leader of the bad people here. And he's got many, many shortcomings, personal shortcomings. And one is, he's very diplomatic. You know, occasionally devotees are a little diplomatic, but not in the same spirit. Let me tell you one little incident I witnessed, and I was sort of involved in a little. When Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, visited Bhaktivedanta Manor in England one time in the sort of mid-70s or something like that, then a group of senior devotees, sannyasis, there's maybe four or five of them, they came with him. And because they're very senior, so they're looking, giving them special attention. They were being cooked for specially, and we would serve them especially. And I was there. And one of them was a sannyasi, a very, very nice devotee, named Tamal Krishna Goswami. Some of you might have heard of him. Perhaps even some of you might have seen him, although he passed away some years ago, unfortunately. So he was there, and we were serving the prasadam. And in the middle of it all, Tamal Krishna Goswami got a little upset. And he said that there was another sannyasi also, there's a few of them. Another one was named Adi Keshava Swami. Adi Keshava Swami. And Tamal Krishna Goswami got a little upset and said, look, Adi Keshava needs a chapati. Get him a chapati. Why doesn't he have a chapati? And we all, okay. And someone went out to get him a chapati. And Tamal Krishna Goswami said, and bring me one too. Prabhupada said that under certain very extraordinary circumstances, a devotee might possibly, maybe, be a little diplomatic. And Prabhupada gave an example. If you're there in the street somewhere, and a cow comes running by. Cow comes running by. Wow, what happened? And then, 30 seconds later or a minute later, a butcher comes running by with a knife. Did you see where the cow went? The cow went that way, of course. Then Prabhupada said, you could say, yes, the cow went that way. It would be permissible under the circumstances, but not as a regular practice. Not as a regular practice. Because it'll do many things, bad things. But one bad thing it'll do is it will corrupt you internally. You will become prone to dishonesty. And it will become easier for you to not be truthful. Just depending on the circumstances, what to say which will benefit me, rather than what is true. Like I had one experience with one devotee, I won't mention his name, There was something. Something was happening in South Africa, and he told us the next day. And he said, yes, I saw it on TV. My wife told me. So we shouldn't follow in the footsteps of Duryodhana. Prabhupada said, Prabhupada raised the question, how can you recognize a devotee? And Prabhupada said, you can recognize a devotee because he or she is a perfect gentleman or gentle lady. Yeah, a person of quality, a person of character, and not just some sort of wheeler-dealer type out to make a profit by any means. And, you know, people like Duryodhana, they calculate. He obviously calculated what to say to get the result of protection for Bhishma, but without Bhishma feeling that I'm not taken seriously as a big warrior. He calculated how to put it. And people like that are making calculations all the time. How, you know what they say? How to push the other person's button. So, he calculated, and Prabhupada mentions here the calculation he made. He had been in some anxiety. Will Bhishma and Drona, you know, they're with me, they're on my side. But, you know, they, for many years, they've been close to the Pandavas, who are, you know, who are opposing Duryodhana on the battlefield. For many years they've been close to the Pandavas, so can I rely on them? Or is it possible they may sort of change side in the middle of the battle, or something like that, or not fight much? So can I depend on them? And then he thought, actually, I can depend on them. He's calculating in his mind. And can any of you remember how, why he thought that he could depend on Bhishma and Drona, even though they'd had many years of friendship with the Pandavas? Can you remember? Prabhupada stated it here. He felt confident he could depend on them because something had happened. What happened? Should I give a prize if anyone guesses? Can any of you remember? We read it. Yes. See, at least one person was listening. Others, well. Good, thank you. That's it. That's what Prabhupada said. We read it. Loud and clear. You know that story, right? There was the attempt to undress Draupadi in front of many very, like, respectable seniors. It was a very insulting situation. And Bhishma and Drona, they were there, they were right there. And she was sort of like their favorite. At least they were, you know, had been very fond of her. But now here she is, they're trying to take her sari off. And they just sat there. They didn't even say anything, let alone do anything. They just sat there with their heads down. However, we don't see anything. And so Jerry then thought, okay, I can depend on these people. Basically, it means they're weak. They're weak. In a situation where it's a question of morality or immorality, then they're very weak. And they won't stand against immorality. They won't stand for morality. You know that story? Krishna incarnated as the endless sun. You know, there was an event before that. If you read the Bhagavatam, in the seventh canto, right at the beginning, first chapter of the seventh canto, just before the story of Lord Nrisingadev, there is the description of the Rajasuya sacrifice of Maharaj Yudhisthira. And so many people were there, and Lord Krishna was there too. And in those big sacrificial ceremonies, some respectable, like the most respectable senior person is elected or appointed to kind of oversee what goes on. So the question was raised, who should do that? And I think it was Sahadev, one of Arjuna's brothers, younger brother, who suggested Krishna. Krishna should do that. He should be that person, because he's the best. And everyone said, yes, right, okay. Everyone was in favor, except one person. His name was Shishupal. Shishupal, he was, you know, you could say in modern day jargon, he was a bit of a loser. He really got out of the bed on the wrong side. Got born on the wrong side of the bed, maybe. He was a person. Well, interestingly enough, in his previous birth, he was Ravana. How's that? Ravana, killed by Lord Ram. In the birth before that, he was Hiranyakashipu. Yeah. And so there's this description there, at right at the beginning of the seventh canto, and the context, the overall context is that I think Maharaj Yudhisthira or someone is asking Narada Muni, how did Hiranyakashipu take birth? This incredibly bad person. Where did he come from? And so Narada Muni is explaining the history. Yeah. So it's a long story, but Shishupal, because he was Ravana, before that he was an education guru, he really hated the Supreme Lord. He just despised the Supreme Lord. And it's described there that his entire life, even when as a little child, see over there by the door, this is Karuneshwari Radha. You see her? Haribol. Haribol. When Shishupal was the same age as her, speaking but not, you know, fluently child language, Shishupal, at that time and from that time, never said anything ever except criticism of Krishna. He never spoke of anything else, ever. If you asked him, how's the weather? You'd say, you know, it feels like, you know, he might say, I just saw a dark rain cloud and it reminded me of Krishna and I feel sick. What are you going to do today? I'm going to avoid Krishna. This is all he said. Only negativity about Krishna. So anyway, what happened was, at that Rajasriya sacrifice of Maharaj Yudhisthira, this whole little event which I mentioned occurred. Krishna was sort of voted in to be the overseer of the Rajasriya sacrifice. And Shishupal, he objected extremely strongly. He just became totally sort of distraught and angry and nasty. And Shishupal started criticizing Krishna. He shouldn't be the senior person here because of this, and because of that, and because of various other things. And Krishna had given him a blessing that you can criticize me 99 times and I will not do anything. But if you criticize me 100 times, I'll kill you. So Krishna was counting. Shishupal was criticizing. Krishna was counting. And Krishna was warning him, Shishupal, that was 70. You should stop. Shishupal, that was 80. You must stop for your own good. That was 90, 95. You must stop. Shishupal couldn't stop. And finally, 99 criticisms. And Krishna told him, listen, you must stop or I'm going to kill you right now. Shishupal could not stop. He criticized Krishna for the 100th time. Krishna pulled out his chakra. You know, Sudarshan chakra. It is sharp like a razor. But it's also like a very powerful weapon. And Krishna just pulled it out very quickly. People couldn't even see so fast. And threw it. And people couldn't even see it happen. But what they saw was Shishupal's head came off. And that was it. Good night, Shishupal. And then the Sudarshan chakra came back. And Krishna did it so quickly. You know, I don't know if you've ever watched any of the Western cowboy and so-called American Indian movies. Did you ever watch any of them? You know, did you ever? Anyway, you know, they have these guys, they draw their guns out very quickly and shoot each other. You know, fast draw. So Krishna, he pulled out that chakra so quickly. But the thing is, he pulled it out too quickly. And he cut his finger. Krishna's finger was cut when he released that Sudarshan chakra. It was bleeding. And Draupadi was there. And Draupadi saw this. Krishna's fingers bleeding. So Draupadi took the one edge of her sari, pulled off a strip of cloth, and wrapped it around Krishna's finger to stop the bleeding, and it stopped the bleeding. And Krishna was very happy. Thank you very much. And Krishna told her, don't worry. I will not forget this. In the future, When you need help, I will help you. So in this particular incident, which Prabhupada refers to in the purport, where there was a gambling match, Yudhisthira was gambling against, I think it was Shakuni, and Yudhisthira lost everything, and lost his wife. Gentlemen, you should never gamble. And ladies, you should never, ever let your husbands gamble. Is that okay? Because he might gamble you away. Or you might win a second. And that wouldn't be really so suitable. So yeah, gambling. Sometimes destroys people, destroys them in all respects. So, yes. So he lost everything, including his wife, and she was dragged over to the other side. And in order to just show and prove and just be sort of very blatant about it, to show that she is ours and not yours. That's a nasty, aggressive mood. Dushasana, one of the brothers of Duryodhana, started pulling the sari off Draupadi. And of course, she tried to resist. She's holding on. But he's like a big, powerful warrior, kind of a bit like a monster, and she is just a lady, and therefore she couldn't stop him. She tried, but then she saw that actually I can't stop him, there's nothing I can do, and so she let go with one hand, still holding with the other hand. But she let go with one hand and raised that hand and just called out, "Hey Krishna, hey Govinda," and prayed to Krishna for protection. And you know what happened? Nothing. Except more sari was being pulled away. And then she understood that she could actually do nothing at all. So she let go with both hands and just called out to Krishna and just took shelter of Krishna. And then Krishna incarnated as the endless sari. And Dushasana was pulling and pulling, and the sari, the cloth, is piling up and piling up. But it was endless. It was endless. And eventually he became exhausted, he had to stop. Krishna protected Draupadi. That's what Prabhupada's referring to here. And if you compare, he just cut his finger. You know, it's not nice, but it's not that serious. And she just took off a little piece of cloth, not a lot at all, and just wrapped it around and helped Krishna in that way. But Krishna, his reciprocation far exceeded what he was reciprocating for, what she had done, which he was now acknowledging. Yeah. So like that, it's... Prabhupada mentions it here, and it's a very nice pastime, and we should try and remember that. A similar point, somewhat, a related point at least, is there in regard to the month of Kartik, which is just coming up. Did you know that? In about 9 months. Won't be long. You know, Mother Yashoda tried to tie Krishna, but But the rope was always two fingers too short. And even she got more rope, and even more, and then lots of rope, really lots, many meters, hundreds. It was two fingers too short. Couldn't get around the waist of little Krishna. Krishna was only, you know, the size, just a child. But hundreds of meters of rope would not get around. So we know, well, eventually her mood of concern, motherly concern, I must discipline this child so that he grows up to be good and he doesn't grow up to be some sort of misfit, delinquent, corner boy. Do you have corner boys? Yeah, still. We don't want Krishna to grow up like a corner boy and become the head. You know, Krishna was stealing butter, makhan. We don't want him to become the head of the makhan mafia. And people will wonder, what sort of mother did he have? What sort of mother? What sort of useless mother? So, because her love and that motherly mood was just overpowering her and overpowering Krishna, then the rope became long enough. But, yeah, it became long enough. And so the explanation is that two fingers, the rope was two fingers too short until eventually it was long enough. The one finger represents the determination of the devotee to serve the Lord, like Mother Yashoda. She wanted to serve Krishna by correcting him. So one finger represents the desire and determination of the devotee. The other finger represents the mercy of the Lord. But just notice, I don't know about your fingers, but notice mine. Do you notice something? This is the effort of the devotee finger. Okay? This is the mercy of the Lord finger. I don't know about your fingers. This, on my hand, this one is longer. You see? In other words, both have to be there, but ultimately the mercy of the Lord is the main thing. Yeah. It's the main thing. It's definitely not that we must simply work hard and just on the basis of our hard work, success may be there. And there's no need of mercy. And it's not that we should just sleep. And like, you know, Arjuna on the battlefield, he might have told Krishna, listen, you want this battle won? Okay, you fight. I'm going to sleep. Wake me up when you've won. In other words, it's not simply the mercy of the Lord. Both things have to be there. Very important. So, but ultimately the mercy of the Lord is the main factor. And in that pastime with Krishna and Draupadi in the gambling match, it comes out very nicely. So there's just a few points we can gain from this verse and purport. Even though it's not really, it's just historical really. It's just setting the scene, what was going on there. And there's no instruction from Krishna about how to be a devotee or anything like that. But still, we can always learn from Bhagavad Gita. Hare Krishna. So devotees, Advaita Acharya Guru, I heard it's your appearance day tomorrow. Was it another Advaita Acharya? It's another one. We have a couple of questions here. Let's just look at those. This is now a question about pronunciation of words with V and B. Sometimes a particular word is pronounced Vallabha, sometimes as Balabha. Which is the correct way to pronounce these words? And if they're not pronounced correctly, can it alter the meaning? Well, you know, that's a bit of a technical question, but it's interesting. You know, first thing is, in Sanskrit language, there's definitely a V sound. Actually, the letter is Va. In Sanskrit, every letter ends with A. Did you know that? So there's no B, but there's Ba. There's no D, there's Da. There's no P, there's Pa. This is Sanskrit language. So there's definitely a V or Va. But then there are two Ba's. Did you know that? One is just Ba, and the other is Pa. Did you catch that? Pa. B, it's like B-H-A, Ba. So there's Ba, which is just B-A, and then there's Ba. So that's there in Sanskrit, and when Sanskrit is pronounced in a truly authentic way, the V is pronounced V. And, you know, like that, you get the idea. However, in certain areas, certain localities, due to just historical influence and just the way society has evolved, there are different, slightly different pronunciations. Yeah. Of Sanskrit, of course, they don't use Sanskrit much. It's more just a scholarly language. But to some degree, in different areas, there are slightly different pronunciations of Sanskrit. And in some cases, a va may be pronounced a bit more as a va, just the way that you talk. One of those areas is Bengal. In Bengali, you know, Bengali, like Hindi, Bengali is derived from Sanskrit. Bengali is somewhat closer to Sanskrit than Hindi, because Hindi has been influenced by Urdu from the other western side. So you get certain words which are in like everyday Hindi, at least, which they've actually come from Urdu backgrounds or kind of Arabic backgrounds. But Bengali is closer, not that close, but closer to Sanskrit. But somehow in Bengal, the has become ba. Yes. If you go there, you'll see that. It's just so common. Very, very common. That they don't really use the much. Even though they may, if you look at it, but, you know, when it's written, a va is there, but they pronounce it va. So that's just sort of, you know, little cultural note. But then the point was, second point was, if, you know, does the pronunciation matter that much or not? doesn't matter at all. Let me just say in that regard that when you go to different parts of the world, you find devotees who pronounce, for example, Krishna somewhat differently. Like in Russia, not everyone, but some people, they pronounce Krishna, Krishna. Because in Russian, there is not really an I sound, there's an E sound. I could teach you a little Russian. The only time you get an I sound is if there is a vowel in front of it. How's that? You just learned something about Russian. Otherwise, they don't use I. They only use E. So if we find many devotees, not all but many, and Hare Krishna is Hare Krishna. Now in China, it's, you know, even a little more extreme, that in Chinese language, there is not so much of an R sound, but rather they use more like an L. And when the first Chinese devotees came to Mayapur quite some years ago, some of the other devotees, noticed that when these Chinese devotees chant Hare Krishna, they don't chant Hare Krishna. They chant something more like Hare Krishna. Something along those lines. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Rama. See? And some devotees thought, wait a minute, this is not right. We have to give them elocution lessons, pronunciation, how to enunciate the language. Otherwise, they won't be able to progress in Krishna consciousness. But then we noticed that they were progressing in Krishna consciousness. And indeed, some of them were really nice devotees. And then we understood, doesn't really matter so much. It's more a question of a person's sincerity at heart. So that's what I'd say. At least in very practical terms of the usage of language. Okay, let's carry on. Some people believe there's no God, especially when they have problems, right? How can we preach and convince them that there is God? Well, you know, you have to learn how to present Krishna consciousness under different circumstances to people in different situations. You know, ultimately, if people are having difficulties, ultimately it would be good to help them, if you can, to understand that the problems are there because previously they did wrong things. And now they're getting their karma. This is actually what's happening. And if you can help them to understand that, you're really helping them. If you just pat them on the head, sort of treat them like a child, pat them on the head and tell them, look, it's okay. That's not going to really help them. We should try and help them understand what is really the situation. And that's what it is. You remember when they had that big tsunami down in Indonesia, somewhere down there, and so many people were killed? Massive, massive, hundreds of thousands of people died. I saw one of these newspaper little advertisement things on the side of the road, and it said, "Tsunami, where was God?" In other words, God is not doing his job. He was asleep at the wheel. And the tsunami came and killed people. It's his fault. Well, it's not. because we have done so many things, and we must get their reactions, therefore these things happen to us. But we may not, generally people cannot see the connection between what I did before and what is happening now. But there's a connection. This is karma. Karma means it's like a coin. Head side, what you do. Tail side, the reaction. And a coin, heads, tails. Heads I win, tails you lose. But with a coin, you can't have the head side without the tail side. Once you have the coin, you have both, heads and tails. So, once you perform the activity, the reaction is just going to be there. That's all. And you can't say, well, I'll take the head side, but you keep the tail side. I don't want the tail side. You automatically have both. So I'd advise you then, if you want to really help the person to come to grips with their situation in life, try and help them to understand in that way. How does a devotee choose a guru? Well, here's a simple answer. I mean, we can answer in different ways, but a simple answer. See who amongst the gurus who sort of you have contact with, see who helps you, see who inspires you, who you feel support from, who you feel you can take instruction from. Because it's meant to be a practical relationship. It's not just a ceremonial relationship. Like, ceremonial relationship would mean, listen to this, I am a devotee. I must eat prasadam. In order to get prasadam, I must offer my food. In order to offer my food, I must have a guru to offer it to. Means, you know, a picture on the altar. Otherwise, if I don't have that, how will I get prasadam? But that's just a ceremonial idea. Just so we can offer our food, it's like a convenience for our eating. But actually, the relationship with the guru is meant to be a practical relationship for you to get guidance, direction, inspiration, internal shelter, so you can progress and develop as a devotee. And last but not least, in the Mahamantra, both Lord Rama and Lord Krishna are mentioned. Why does ISKCON marginalize or doesn't focus on Lord Rama? Hare Krishna, Hare Rama. You know, here's a couple of points. We do give special emphasis to Lord Krishna because he is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swaya. And Lord Ram has come from him. Lord Ram is a form of Lord Krishna. Lord Krishna is not a form of Lord Ram. So that point is there. But, you know, we chant Hare Krishna. I have today chanted 16 rounds. Have you chanted 16 rounds? Already? Three more to go. Have you done 16? Have you done 16? Why? Anyway, okay. means I've chanted the mantra at least 1,728 times. That's 16 times 108. And each one of those times, I chanted Hare Krishna and Hare Rama, equal number of times. Yeah. So, yeah, we, you know, there's so many forms of Lord Krishna, like coming up on next week, right? Next week, was it this week? That's next week. The appearance day of Lord Varaha, am I right? And then the next day, or a couple of days later, is the appearance day of Lord Nityananda. These are also forms of Lord Krishna. On March the 12th is Gopanima, the appearance day of Lord Chaitanya. Ram Nomi is, you know, shortly after that, usually in April, anyway, around there. Then Lord Nrisingha Day, May, usually. These are all different forms of Lord Krishna. And we give them all attention, particularly on their appearance days or days which are especially connected with them. But ultimately, as Lord Brahma says, well, actually, as Srimad Bhagavatam says, Krishna stu Bhagavan Swaya. Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everything, everyone else has expanded from him. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.